Good morning. I'm Frank Reynolds. And these are the men who will make this historic voyage to the moon, the crew of Apollo 8. They are in their command module right now. They've been in there since 5:34 this morning at Cape Kennedy when the hatch was closed. The weather at the Cape is perfect, and astronauts Borman, Lovell, and Anders are all set to go. The weather at the Cape, which had caused some concern last night and yesterday, possibly it might interfere with today's launch, has cleared up, and everything is now apparently all set to go. Standing by at Cape Kennedy to bring us a late status report is ABC science editor Jules Bergman. Jules?
What we're going to see happen after a liftoff may seem slowly. It may seem to take place slowly.
Hello and welcome. This is Michael Annis, and you're listening to episode 165 of the Space Rocket History Podcast. And now, Apollo 8, the launch. We left off last week with the crew inside the capsule, and the hatch was closed at T-minus 2 hours and 17 minutes. Inside Apollo 8, all was quiet. Within their helmets, Borman's crew heard the voice of test conductor Dick Prophet talking to them from the launch control complex 3.5 miles away, where hundreds of engineers monitored data from the spacecraft and booster. For most of the next hour, they followed his instructions, setting switches as part of the complex process of readying the command module for flight. Over in the right couch, Anders was amazed at how calm he felt. It was just like a simulation. He was almost bored. Around pad 39A, the glare of floodlights yielded to a clear dawn. During a break in the switch settings, out of the corner of his eye, Anders noticed something moving. He looked over at a window in the protective heat shield, called the boost protective cover, that covered the command module. A hornet buzzed around and landed, working for a short while, then flew off and returned. Anders thought to himself, "Wow, did that hornet ever pick the wrong place to build a nest?" Far below, the great rocket was filling with fuel. If disaster threatened now, while the Saturn was still earthbound, the men would scurry out of their craft and into a small gondola attached to a slide wire stretching from the launch tower to a concrete bunker. And if there wasn't time for that, Borman could, with the twist of a handle, fire the escape rocket poised above the command module's nose, whisking them up and away from the disaster. But an abort from the pad involved considerable risk of injury, and that was something everyone hoped would not be necessary. Meanwhile, 1,000 yards from the pad, armored tanks stood at the ready in case the men had to be rescued. Inside Apollo 8, Borman asked Dick Prophet, "How is the booster doing?" Prophet assured him that all was well. Now I have a series of clips from Jack King taking us down to the T-minus 15 minutes mark. I edited these clips to include the most important events in the least amount of time.
Meanwhile, on the launch vehicle side, with the Saturn V, the crew here in the control center during this period exercising the flight computer in the instrument unit. This is the brains or guidance system of the Saturn V launch vehicle, and throughout the countdown, we run a number of computer tests with the flight computer and various other elements of the instrument unit to assure that it will be working properly. The hatch is now closed. Our countdown is still proceeding, and all is still go at this time at 2 hours, 14 minutes, 28 seconds and counting. This is launch control. 2 hours, 9 minutes, 57 seconds and counting. Countdown proceeding satisfactorily at this time. Spacecraft test conductor Dick Prophet directing some command checks between Houston Flight, the Mission Control Center in Houston, and the Apollo 8 spacecraft. Command module pilot Jim Lovell responding as the commands are sent to the spacecraft. Coming up shortly will be some checks of the abort advisory system between the crew here on the ground and the Apollo 8 astronauts. This particular test is led by the launch operations manager, Paul Donnelly, who has a responsibility late in the count and during the early portion of liftoff to recommend aborts to spacecraft commander Borman if required. We are now in the process of checking out the abort advisory system, simulating conditions and assuring simulating conditions that would create an abort, and testing out the various communication systems that result in the abort light coming on as a recommendation to spacecraft commander Borman in the cabin. The test now proceeding. Launch vehicle wise, we're still monitoring the status of the liquid propellants aboard all stages of the Saturn V launch vehicle. They appear to be stable. The topping off is continuing. That is replenishing the supply of liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen as it boils off, because it must be maintained at such extremely low temperatures. The astronauts in the spacecraft now responding as their cue lights come on and the abort advisory system checks. T-minus 2 hours and counting. T-minus 2 hours, the countdown proceeding satisfactorily. At this point in the count, we started a very major test just several minutes ago, what's called the EDS test. EDS standing for the Emergency Detection System. This is a final major check of all elements of the emergency detection system within the launch vehicle that signals the crewmen in the spacecraft if there are problems during the final phases of the countdown and, of course, during the powered phase of flight. We use computers to exercise all elements of the emergency detection system during this period. The test will last some 20 to 25 minutes. Spacecraft Commander Frank Borman participating very busily in the test since he has to keep an eye on his abort lights and report back as he gets his various cues. We had an abort advisory system test that preceded this. This was a more of a communications check, although Borman did get his light cues. Now, as far as the emergency detection system check is concerned, it's a joint test with the launch vehicle and space vehicle people participating. We exercise all elements of the emergency detection system as reported. If we did not have the computers participating in a test like this, this test alone would take some 16 hours to complete. However, we will be able to complete it in some 20 to 25 minutes. What is going on at the time is we are creating different abort conditions, simulating them within the launch vehicle. These conditions in turn are sent to the instrument unit, the guidance system for the launch vehicle, which sits atop of the third stage. Within the guidance system, this information is received. We have triple redundancy as far as abort conditions are concerned. That is, there are three different votes that can be registered on any single unsatisfactory condition. Two votes out of three confirming an unsatisfactory condition results in an abort recommendation in most cases to the spacecraft commander, astronaut Frank Borman. We have several abort modes, however, which would be automatic. These would be rather catastrophic conditions in which there might be a loss of thrust on the pad or a possible tip over of the launch vehicle. This very key test is in progress at this time and will continue for some 20 minutes or so. As far as all other elements of the countdown are concerned, all still going well at this time. We're still aiming for our planned liftoff at 7:51 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, flying on a flight azimuth of 72 degrees for that launch time. All elements are go, and in fact, we're a little bit ahead on certain functions in our preparations at this time. That emergency detection system test has been completed satisfactorily, and the astronauts in the spacecraft now preparing to work with the spacecraft test conductor in some checks of the stabilization control system. In during this phase of the test, the astronauts actually exercise those hand controllers in the spacecraft to assure that we get proper responses to the commands that are given by moving the hand controllers. astronauts Jim McDivitt and David Scott, who are the commander and command module pilot for the Apollo 9 mission, have arrived here in the control center and will view the countdown from an observation booth. T-minus 1 hour, 30 minutes, and counting. The boost protective cover was just placed atop the hatch on the Apollo 8 spacecraft just several minutes ago, and the crew in the White Room are now securing the White Room area. They've been alerted by the spacecraft test conductor to secure the area in preparations for their departure. Once the crew does depart at a designated time, the swing arm that is attached now to the spacecraft with the white room at its tip will be moved some 3 feet, actually 12 degrees, from the spacecraft, and it will remain in that standby position until the T-minus 5 minute mark in the countdown, when the swing arm is retracted fully to the side of the umbilical tower at the pad. The purpose here is to have the White Room standing close by in the event an emergency condition developed which would require the astronauts to depart the spacecraft. We could bring the White Room in just from 3 feet away. It is fully retracted at the 5 minute mark in the countdown. The astronauts aboard the spacecraft now participating in this test of the stabilization and control system of the Apollo 8 spacecraft as they move their hand controllers, which would provide maneuvers in space. We're checking the performance here on the ground. All aspects of the mission still are go. Weather is satisfactory. The various tracking elements all go at this time. T-minus 56 minutes, 23 seconds, and counting. The spacecraft swing arm, arm number 9, now has been retracted from the Apollo 8 spacecraft. It's being placed in its standby or park position and will be located some 3 to 5 feet away from the spacecraft hatch. Once this is accomplished, within a matter of minutes, we will arm the 155-pound thrust launch escape tower atop the command module. The swing arm now has been pulled back to its standby position. It will be fully retracted at T-minus 5 minutes in the count. The purpose, of course, is to have the White Room nearby in the event an emergency condition did occur that could require the astronauts to depart from the spacecraft. Once the arm is retracted, the escape tower is armed in case of a catastrophic condition where an abort could be applied. T-minus 48 minutes and counting. T-minus 48, and we are go for the Apollo 8 countdown at this time. The crew in the spacecraft still performing some final checks. Astronaut Frank Borman, the spacecraft commander, just a few minutes ago gave a weather report of his own when he reported that the three-man crew could barely see what looked like some pink clouds out the window. Borman had earlier asked for a weather report from spacecraft test conductor Dick Proppit. Meanwhile, here in the firing room at the Launch Control Center, some 3.5 miles from the launch pad, the countdown still progressing satisfactorily here, and the crew is gearing up for some final checks of the range safety command destruct system. These are the destruct elements aboard the various stages of the vehicle that would destroy the vehicle in flight if required, if the vehicle went off its trajectory. Of course, the astronauts would be aborted from the vehicle if such an event did occur. During this period, working with the Air Force Eastern Test Range tracking elements, we do check out the command safety receivers to assure that if such a condition were required, the abort system and the destruct system would actually be able to receive the signals and accomplish the job. T-minus 39 minutes and counting. T-minus 39, and we are go for our countdown for the Apollo 8 mission to the moon at this time. Just in progress as this announcement came up was another key milestone in our countdown preparations, the power transfer test. This is where we go from external power to the flight batteries aboard the Saturn V launch vehicle to assure that they are all working properly. Then, in order to preserve these batteries, we return again to external power. The final switch to internal power on the batteries occurs at about the 50-second mark in the count. There are some 14 batteries in the Saturn V. The Apollo 8 crew of astronauts Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and Bill Anders standing by in the spacecraft as this test is in progress. T-minus 31 minutes and counting. T-minus 30, our countdown progressing satisfactorily, still aiming toward our planned liftoff time of 7:51 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Apollo 8 crew, astronauts Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and Bill Anders standing by in their spacecraft, 320 feet above the launcher base at Pad A, Complex 39, here at the Kennedy Space Center. The astronauts are standing by for another major function that will be coming up shortly, and that is pressurization of the propellants for the engines they will use in space. These are thrusters, so-called quad thrusters. There are 16 of them located on the service module portion of the spacecraft. These are the thrusters that enable them to maneuver in space. We appear to have had a successful power transfer test with the launch vehicle, in which we went to internal power on the flight batteries, but then returned to external power in order to conserve those batteries. Just a moment ago, astronaut Frank Borman asked his spacecraft test conductor how the launch vehicle was doing, and the report that came back was the launch vehicle is doing fine. This is Apollo Saturn Launch Control at T-minus 26 minutes and counting. We are proceeding at this time. In progress at this time, we are pressurizing the propellants for the spacecraft engine systems that would be used in a space environment. Astronaut Jim Lovell, the man who sits in the middle of the seat and who is the command module pilot, is reporting back to spacecraft test conductor Dick Prophet on the status of the propellants. We pressurized these propellants with helium. The countdown has been going very well since it was picked up at 10:51 p.m. Eastern Standard Time last night. Shortly before we resumed the count, the 9.8 million pound mobile service structure was moved to its park position some 7,000 feet from the pad. About an hour later, we began the propellant loading of the Saturn V launch vehicle. In some 4.5 hours, we loaded close to 1 million gallons total of liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen aboard the three stages of the Saturn V. We now have a vehicle standing 363 feet, that is, and weighing 6.2 million pounds on the launch pad here at the Kennedy Space Center. We're continuing to top off the liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen supplies because they must be maintained under extremely cold temperatures. They will continue to boil off, and we continue to replenish the supply down to the final minutes of the count. T-minus 16 minutes and counting. The Apollo 8 space vehicle is go for our planned liftoff at this time. We have just completed our transfer to full internal power with the fuel cells aboard the Apollo 8 spacecraft. This was confirmed by spacecraft commander Frank Borman. Final checks on the flight azimuth going on at this time, and we're also synchronizing the clocks in the spacecraft with the Mission Control Center in Houston. Following are some of the highlights that will be coming up over the final phases of the count. We'll have a final status check at about 5 minutes and 30 seconds, and at the 5-minute mark, the Apollo access arm, the top arm, will be fully retracted to its fallback position. The countdown sequencer will be armed at 4 minutes and 30 seconds, and we'll get a clearance for launch from the range at the 4-minute mark in the count. The key event will come at 3 minutes and 6 seconds. It's identified in the procedures as the firing command, and it's the start of an automatic sequence. It starts at 3 minutes and 6 seconds and leads up to the ignition of the five engines in the first stage of the Saturn V. Those engines, the sequence for the engine ignition will start at 8.9 seconds. As we build up the thrust, we should get a commit. That is that we have satisfactory thrust coming out of all five engines and have built up a thrust level close to the 7.5 million pounds of thrust required for this rocket. We should get a liftoff at zero.
Up until now, Borman, Lovell, and Anders had known in the back of their minds that there was the possibility that a malfunction would turn this countdown into just another practice run, and they would have to climb out and try again another day. But now, as the count reached T-minus 15 minutes, there seemed to be no doubt they were really going. In the control center, the flight surgeon's monitoring telemetry from the spacecraft saw Borman's heart rate start to climb.
T-minus 11 minutes and counting. T-minus 11, and our count is still go at this time. Coming up shortly, about 5 minutes from this time, actually, we'll retract to its full fallback position, the spacecraft access arm, which is at the 320-foot level at the spacecraft. The astronauts Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and Bill Anders, going through some final communications checks with the crew here in the control center. These are checks of the VHF communications, the very high frequency communications that will be used after liftoff. We want to assure ourselves that they will be operating satisfactorily. Also coming up, the astronaut crew will be busy on some final checks of the Astrocom circuit. This is a special circuit in which the board recommendations could be given to the astronauts if the indications were received as such here in the control center, some 3.5 miles from the launch pad. Also, Mission Control Center in Houston can send these same recommendations. We've now passed the 10-minute mark in our countdown. We're at 9 minutes, 51 seconds, and counting. All aspects of the mission go at this time. Still aiming for a launch time of 7:51 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on a flight azimuth of 72 degrees. The flight azimuth has been verified in the instrument unit, the guidance system for the launch vehicle, and we've also had an update to assure that we have the correct flight azimuth in the spacecraft. This has been confirmed by the crew, and we are proceeding. T-minus 7 minutes, 30 seconds, and counting, still aiming toward our planned liftoff time. Spacecraft test conductor Dick Prophet has just completed a status check of all elements concerned with the spacecraft operations. All reported go, and there were three particularly strong and loud goes from the three astronauts in the spacecraft 320 feet above the base of the launcher at Complex 39. Jim Lovell reported just a few minutes ago that he could see a blue sky and it looked like the sun's out. Spacecraft test conductor reported back that it's a very fine day. We're at T-minus 6 hours, 6 minutes, 50 seconds, and counting, and we are...
With 7 minutes left, Dick Prophet took his final status check, and in the middle of his lengthy poll, he called out, "Spacecraft," and Borman, Lovell, and Anders answered together in full voice, "Go!" Now the pace quickened.
5 minutes, 30 seconds, and our count is still go at this time. We've just completed further status checks here in the firing room at the control center. Here in the control center, we've had our status checks, and the range has given a go, as has the launch director, Rocco Patrone. We are still counting, and we are go coming up on the 5 minute mark in the count. Mark, T-minus 5 minutes and counting, T-minus 5. At this point, the Apollo access arm should be coming back, and it is now moving back at the 320-foot level to its fully retracted position high atop the tower at Pad A. Our countdown is still proceeding at this time at the 4-minute mark in the countdown. The overall count will be turned over to the launch vehicle test conductor. Ray Roberts, the launch vehicle test conductor, will conduct the final 4 minutes as all... different aspects move over to the launch vehicle test conductor's channel. The automatic sequence, as reported, will come in at the 3-minute and 6-second mark in the countdown.
With just 5 minutes to go, the white room and its access arm swung away. At 3 minutes, 7 seconds, the launch pad's automatic sequencer took over, monitoring the last influx of propellants and controlling the final events before liftoff.
Coming up on 3 minutes and 30 seconds and counting. Mark, T-minus 3 minutes and 30 seconds and counting. We have completed our communications checks with the Apollo 8 astronauts in the cabin, and the communications are go. Coming up shortly, we'll be in the automatic sequence where we have a completely automatic checkout of the launch vehicle from 3 minutes and 6 seconds down. We have firing command. The firing command is in. We are now on the automatic sequence, T-minus 3 minutes and counting. During this period, once we do get the firing command, the various tanks within the three stages of the Saturn V launch vehicle begin to pressurize. They all must be under pressure before we're ready to launch. We have a sequence status board here in the control room that will give us readouts on the overall status of the space vehicle as we reach the terminal phases in the countdown. Now, two minutes, 32 seconds, and counting. Our status board indicates that all aspects are ready. Instrument unit is ready. Spacecraft ready. Final check of the emergency detection system. That ready light also on. First stage preparations are completed. 2 minutes, 15 seconds, and counting. The tanks continuing to pressurize in the vehicle. Not as many reports coming now as we all stand by on the launch vehicle test conductor's channel. Coming up on the 2 minute mark on the Apollo 8 mission. 2 minutes and counting. T minus 2 minutes and counting. We are still proceeding. We now have recorded that the first stage liquid oxygen tank has been pressurized and the pressure is still building up. 1 minute, 45 seconds and counting. We have a vehicle weighing 6.2 million pounds on the pad. Interestingly enough, some 1,200 pounds of that weight is just frost on the side of the vehicle created by the extremely low temperatures of the propellants. Coming up on 90 seconds, mark T-minus 90 seconds and counting. The Apollo 8 crew standing by, spacecraft commander Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, Bill Anders. We now have a report that the liquid hydrogen tank on the third stage is pressurized. 1 minute, 15 seconds. All third stage propellants pressurized at this time as we come up on the 60-second mark on a flight to the moon. T-minus 60 seconds and counting. T-minus 60 seconds and counting. The vehicle now is completely pressurized. We're coming up on a power transfer shortly. T-minus 50 seconds and counting. We have the power transfer. We're now on the flight batteries within the launch vehicle. 45 seconds. Final reports coming from Frank Borman at this time. Final look at the switch list aboard the spacecraft. 35 seconds and counting. We'll lead up to an ignition sequence start at 8.9 seconds. This will lead up as we build up the thrust to a liftoff. If all goes well, at zero. We just passed the 25-second mark in the count. 20 seconds. All aspects, we are still go at this time. T-minus 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9. We have ignition sequence start. The engines are armed. 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. We have commit. We have liftoff. Liftoff at 7:51 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Ignition. Suddenly, the base of the Saturn sprawled a cauldron of smoke and flame that gave way to a river of golden white fire, spilling out from both sides of the launch platform. Yellow smoke billowed. For long seconds, the Saturn strained against a set of enormous hold-down clamps while the first stage engines built up to full power. Up in the command module, there was no noise or vibration, but somehow, Borman and his crew could sense the growing power far beneath them. At T-minus 3 seconds, there came a distant rumbling, like thunder on the horizon, that swelled into a roar. Finally, in the midst of the heightening commotion, came a sudden and mild jolt, and Borman's crew heard Prophet cry, "Liftoff!" Borman glanced at the mission clock on the instrument panel. "Liftoff!" he called, his voice charged with adrenaline. "The clock is running." The Saturn ascended, seemingly racked by spasms, steering nervously past the launch tower, its engines correcting and recorrecting in quick, spasmodic jerks. Up in the command module, these corrections translated into sudden, jarring motions that threw the men from side to side against their harnesses. No simulation had ever hinted at the violence of this ride. In the post-flight debriefing, Anders would say only that he was impressed by the Saturn's very positive control. But in reality, he felt as if he were helpless prey in the mouth of a giant angry dog. After all those simulations, if the first 10 seconds were this different, what would the rest of the flight be like? Long seconds passed in thunder while the rocket climbed its own length and still higher. Borman's crew barely heard Prophet shout, "Tower clear!" The danger of collision with the launch tower passed.
they were climbing.
Salutations from the foothills of North Carolina. This is Michael Annis, your host, and I wanted to say thanks for listening to episode 165 of the Space Rocket History Podcast, entitled Apollo 8, The Launch. Space Rocket History is a proud member of the History Podcasters and the Tech Podcasting Network. I want to give a big shout out to all my longtime listeners. Thanks for staying subscribed, and extend a warm welcome to my new listeners. I'm glad you're here. Today, we salute my Gemini-level donors. Gemini donors give $40 or more during the calendar year. Thanks for your continued support, Gemini donors. I am still loving Apollo 8. We got a lot of Jack King this week, and next week we will get some Paul Haney, and Mr. Cronkite is going to weigh in as well. So next week we'll finish the launch phase and get through translunar injection. So don't miss next week's episode number 166. Well, it's finally nice to get Apollo 8 off the ground. The crew wasn't certain until the countdown reached T-minus 15 minutes. Wouldn't that have been frustrating if they had to redo the launch and go through all that preparation again? But, of course, that didn't happen, and Apollo 8 launch went very smoothly. I hope you enjoyed the custom introduction to this week's episode. If you fast-forwarded through it, you might want to go back and listen. It was the ABC Network coverage with Frank Reynolds and a little bit of Jules Bergman. Okay, I decided to stop the episode when Apollo 8 cleared the tower. Now, why did I do that? I bet a lot of you already know the answer to that question. But in case you don't, it's because when Apollo 8 clears the tower, Houston assumes flight control. And, of course, the secondary reason, the length of the episode was getting close to 30 minutes. So I try to hold it to that if I can. Lastly, I want to give a big shout out again this week to Andrew Chaikin for his great book, A Man on the Moon, which I am relying on heavily for these Apollo episodes. Okay, I posted some pictures for this episode on my website, spacerockethistory.com. I hope you check those out. I was very pleased to receive several donations to support the podcast over the past week. Alfred B. from Germany donated at the Orion level, and since he has donated 3 years in a row, he is awarded the treasured moon emoticon. Stephen S. from Stuttgart, Germany, donated at the Apollo level and earned his rocket emoticon. Stephen S. from the UK donated at the Apollo level. Thank you, Stephen. David W. from Florida donated at the Apollo level and earned the coveted rocket emoticon. Thank you, David. Robert M. from Texas donated at the Mercury level and earned the coveted rocket emoticon. Dirk H. from New Zealand donated at the Soyuz level and earned the coveted rocket emoticon. Justin M. pledged on Patreon at the Vostok level. Thank you, Justin. Colm A. pledged on Patreon at the Apollo level. Thank you very much, all donors. I sincerely appreciate it. I love to see those rocket and moon emoticons being given out. This brings our Patreon donors up to 55 and our overall donors for the year of 2016 to 121 with a goal of reaching 250. To stay on pace for reaching 250 by the end of the year, we need to get at least 4 more donors by the end of June. So if you are enjoying this podcast regularly and haven't donated yet, Please donate to fund the podcast. It doesn't have to be a lot, and you could make a one-time Sputnik donation for just $5, or you can make a minimum donation of 50 cents per month at Patreon. If you think Space Rocket History is worth $5 a year or 50 cents per month, please go ahead and make a donation. To make a one-time donation, go to the homepage, spacerockethistory.com, and click on the orange Donate button on the top right of the page. Or you can sign up with Patreon by clicking the Patreon link also on the homepage, just below the Donate button. Or you can donate by check. Just send me an email and I will give you the address. All donors are rewarded with their name on the donors page at the website, spacerockethistory.com, based on their donation level. To stay updated on the podcast, including previews of the next episode, please follow me on Twitter and Facebook. The links are on the homepage, spacerockethistory.com. I want to encourage everyone to share the podcast. Feel free to link the homepage or a particular episode on all social media. And thanks to those who have already done so, like my retweeters. Jet City Star, 1202 Alarm, Andy Cox, Atherin, ATM Int Arch, Bert at Home, Buddy P. Murphy, CMWD Website, Drupo Puppies, E.G. Robert, Futurama King, Jacob Hahn, Kadavi 1202, Keith Drinkwine, M. Lunyon, Pompeiator, Rapid Mustang, Rapid Wolf 95, Skibby, Stephen Lebowski, Stiggy, This is Alex Boyd, Tomasino 1202, Warren Foxley, Fredevil, and Laverer. I really appreciate it. If I missed anyone, let me know and I will get back to you next week. This is the end of content for episode 165, and I had a few off-topic thoughts. If you're not interested, please feel free to switch to the next podcast. Thanks for sticking around, folks. I really appreciate it. I thought I would do some statistics. I know a lot of you are interested in statistics for the podcast, so this is for those that are interested. Space Rocket History is heard in 85 countries around the world. Now, last week, I gave you the top 10 countries for episode downloads for May. So I thought it might be interesting to mention the positions 11 through 20 in episode downloads for May. So here are the countries, beginning with number 11, Netherlands, 12, South Africa, 13, Spain, 14, Belgium, 15, Finland, 16, New Zealand, 17, Ireland, 18, Hungary, 19, Austria, and 20, India. So there were several European countries, but South Africa, New Zealand, and India were there as well. I want to give all the listeners in those countries a big shout out and say thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. In personal news, I am continuing to post trip pictures on Facebook and Twitter, and if you're not enjoying those, I urge you to get on the Facebook, follow me on Facebook and Twitter, and you can get the links to that on the homepage. I'm getting close to the end of the pictures. This week I posted Mission Control. That has to qualify as one of the highlights of the trip. The photos were taken from the gallery, which is behind the control center. It's the area where special guests are allowed to sit, such as the astronauts' family members or presidents, and even the Queen of England have sat in the gallery. The tour guide pointed out which seat that she had sat in, and of course, a lot of people wanted to go sit in that seat too, including my wife. I have a picture of my wife sitting in the Queen's seat, and I haven't posted that. I don't know if I'll post that or not. But Mission Control was great, just to sit there and think of all the space history that occurred in that room. There were two methods of reaching Mission Control, the stairs or the elevator. It was several flights that we walked up, and the guide took those who couldn't make the climb in the elevator. He had the exact number of steps, and I don't remember what it was, but it was several flights. Once you reach the top of the steps, you can enter in the back of the room of the gallery which is kind of laid out like a movie theater. And that's what we did, take some pictures, and we sat down, listened to the guide talk a little bit. And while we were there, we noticed another group of people that were actually inside Mission Control, the control room itself. So, of course, we asked, are we going in there next? And unfortunately, the answer was no. Those tourists that we saw in there were on what is called a Level 9 tour, where you actually got to go inside the control center and see other restricted sites as well. Of course, I wanted to do that. But the tour guide said that you have to book that tour, the Level 9 tour, well in advance. We couldn't just go over and sign up. So after our tour was completed, I checked on getting a Level 9 tour, and it cost about $100. And like the guide says, you have to book it in advance. So if I ever go out there again, I am definitely taking the Level 9 tour. In other news, I am so delighted to report that my grandson, Evan, got to go home this week. He's still having a little issue with his hemoglobin, but the doctor thinks he'll grow out of that. So, of course, we are very thankful and feeling a whole lot better about things this week. I want to thank those who express concern and support on Evan's condition. I really appreciate it. Okay, that's all the time I have for this week. I hope to have episode 166 up by next Thursday. So long for now.